This podcast is in no way affiliated with the Stars production or Diana Gabaldone. All views expressed are solely our own. Welcome to the Outlander podcast,
where the men are kilted, the women are winsome,
and the whiskey is neat. Welcome to episode 205 of the Outlander podcast. I'm Ginger.
And I'm Summer, and we are in love with all things Outlander.
And now,
on to our read-along. This week, we are discussing Chapter 59, entitled, In Which Much Is Revealed.
Eileen P. writes, regarding the title, In Which Much Is Revealed, this could mean previously unknown information or secret information is divulged. It is not clear whether this will mean the reader will become enlightened and or a character or characters.
I don't know. It's Diana. I think everyone's going to be revealed something.
Everything is fair game.
Right. Like, I feel like this is the chapter where she's like, all right, guys, here we go.
Taking my clothes off. You're going to see everything. Oh, sorry. Turning the lights on. You're going to see all the bits you fondled.
What? I don't think it's that kind of chapter.
Melissa M. writes, the chapter opens with Claire and Marsali in Lord John's office. I've always thought that the fact that the murder of Mina Alcott is juxtaposed with Claire's glimpse of Lord John and Jamie's embrace. Both are a death, Mina's being the literal death, and the death of Claire's vision of the man she thought she knew and loved. Yes, Jamie was married to Leghair, and that was quite a shock. But after seeing Jamie passionately embrace Lord John, she questions Jamie's life. Is this the man she knew that she loved? Can she accept that he may have had a relationship with Lord John? She recalls his speech and begins to question all the lies of omission Jamie had made. I do love that Diana lightens the heaviness of Claire's internal debate with Marsali's innocent questions. And I love Fergus in this scene, and I really hope they keep the Branfield hand moment with the Minutemen. So, on to the chapter. So we're at the governor's ball. Claire has observed Jamie with a male who is most certainly in love with him, and she's not 100% sure of Jamie's own feelings. She's seen the dead body and the small footprints of Mr. Willoughby leading toward the window. Jamie is gone, and Claire was in the governor's private office with Marsali. The authorities suspect Mr. Willoughby, but not Jamie. This is the same room she'd seen John and Jamie embrace in. Marsali can't, or maybe won't, believe that Mr. Willoughby is guilty. Quote, I ken he's a heathen, but we live with the man. We know him. Unquote. But how well do they know these men? How well do we actually know anyone?
I mean, I think I know you pretty well, Ginger.
I know.
And it's mostly because you won't stop talking.
That's true.
You share everything.
I don't think I share everything. I talk about a lot of stuff, but I don't. Yeah, I'm actually a pretty private person, some.
So is it more that you give the impression of sharing everything?
No, I think it's the fact that it might be a false impression. I think if someone does have that impression, then it's definitely a false impression, because there's a difference between like actually divulging personal things, right? And just not stopping talking.
So you admit.
I never said I was a quiet one.
Quiet's not the issue.
Yeah, if you're talking, you're not quiet. I mean, I guess you could talk quietly. Erica B. writes, clearly everyone thinks Mr. Willoughby has murdered that lady. Claire and Marsali don't seem to think so, but Claire has doubts about how well they know Willoughby and also Jamie. Claire remembers what Jamie had said their first night together at the brothel. Will you take me and risk the man that I am for the sake of the man you knew? Claire gets herself together, or collects herself. Now she's starting to make sense. She's not saying it's impossible for Jamie to have taken Lord John as a lover. She believes that for him to have done so and be able to hide it from her means he's not the man she thought he was. So there has to be another explanation. Hang tight, girl. There is.
It's coming.
She remembers how he didn't tell her about Leary. At 2 in the morning, Fergus comes in to collect Marsali and Claire, if she'll go. And Claire says that she'll stay. Now, in a joke on the militiamen accompanying him, he offers his hand to shake and thanks him for his help and then releases the false hand.
How long he was planning that. Like, from the moment he put it on that night, was he like, I am going to pull the biggest, funnest prank on somebody. I don't know who yet, but somebody's walking away with my hand.
I don't know if he did it with the intention of coming home with it. Yeah, that'd be funny.
I mean, he didn't fill it with like semi-precious jewels. He filled it with like bran.
Yeah, because if someone touched it or rubbed it or accidentally pat it, a hand does not feel like jewels or anything.
It also
hard.
Doesn't feel like bran.
Sure it does. If there was enough bran in the glove to make it taut, it could have been hard enough, but still, you know, a little bit malleable, and like gems won't give, but bran would give. An hour later, Lord John appears. Jamie is still being questioned. John remarks, quote, I had no idea he spoke French so well, unquote. Claire bites with, I don't suppose you know him all that well. Ouch. Joe B. writes, Claire, in her long conversation with John, is in essence meeting the ex, that one other person who has had a similar relationship with your beloved and by whom you feel threatened, rightly or wrongly.
Yes, but they both are acting like the jealous one. Like it's a cat fight, practically, a verbal cat fight. I know I'm better. No, I know I'm more. I know more about you. And I almost feel like he let that thing about Willie out of spite.
Well, we're not there yet, but probably so. Like, did I just say that?
Yeah, like, oh, oops.
I'm so sorry.
Did I do that?
Joby continues. Leary was never a real threat and one who never truly understood Jamie. John does understand Jamie, and I think Claire knows it. Jamie rarely speaks of Leary positively or at all, whereas John has been a true friend for much of her time away. Her response to his question about Jamie's French skills, quote, I don't suppose you know him that well, unquote, is deliberately provoking, and how cool is John in not rising to her bait? John sees he can be honest with Claire. He admits his shock at discovering her identity as he acknowledges hers at discovering his. Jamie has most often used vague language when talking of Claire's absence. She's gone or lost. Rarely, if ever, has he said dead or corrected another if they have inferred that. Anne S. writes, Claire and Gray act like two dogs snarling, circling, and snapping at each other over a prized steak. Jamie, Claire, you have won. Put those heckles down and just pee to mark your territory.
Dude, gross.
Claire aims to go to him. John doesn't, to go to Jamie. John does not think that's such a good idea. She opens the door and looks out into the hall, and then she shuts the door. There were a lot of officers and a face that she recognized, Captain Leonard. She's like, oh, Lord, what are we going to do? They're coming this way. So she turns to hide in the office, confusing Lord John, only telling him, don't give me away if you value Jamie's life, unquote. She plops onto a love seat and places a towel over her head. And then the admiral enters the room, sees the woman on the love seat, and inquires about her. He continues to Lord John that he's sent for more troops, guards for the town, to search for the murderer. He says they will follow the law in pursuit of Mr. Willoughby. Because there are some, like, people chomping at the bit to just, like, tear that dude apart once they get him. Then Lord John, once they've left, tells her, Claire, it's safe for her to rise. He pulls out her fan, which she dropped in the corridor after she'd witnessed him and Jamie embracing. So he knows. Well, he saw her, so of course he knows. Melissa M. writes, Ah, Lord John and Claire, one of my favorite moments in the governor's office is when Claire pretends to faint when she recognizes Thomas Leonard. First, I think it's hilarious that Claire finally realizes that she does indeed have a glass face and proceeds to cover it with a damp towel, which sounds gross.
Yeah, what?
Lord, it does, doesn't it? You don't know what's been on there. Even sweat is kind of nasty.
I mean, you're in the Caribbean. Everything's sweaty, so it's got to be sweat.
Lord John proves his worth to Claire as Jamie's friend by playing it absolutely cool when Thomas Leonard comes in. My favorite moment is when Claire's fingers twitch when Lord John says, quote, she's had enough brandy to fell a horse, unquote. fingers twitching? I love that this small move is a nod to Jamie's similar habit. I hope they keep it in the show.
I mean, but whiskey's her poison, though, isn't it?
Dude, alcohol, brandy, whiskey, alcohol is her poison.
Sangria. She's not picky.
That's true. See, I told you it was more than just the whiskey. Their conversation opens up. Lord John didn't know Jamie was married, or at least currently married. He knew that he had been married, but he understood that she was dead. Claire says that Jamie has mentioned him, John, as a friend. And she says they only just reunited. Now, remember, it's been 4 months since she ran into him at the print shop.
Well, that, I mean, but comparatively, 4 months is just when you've been separated for 20 years.
And collectively, he's known John longer. So that's kind of sad. But
I know, I'm like,
of course he loves Claire is the one for him, of course.
Well, but. And though, to be honest, John and Jamie are almost parents as well, like co-parenting.
Oh, sure. Co-parent, yeah.
So they have kind of the same exact relationship, minus the sex, that Claire and Jamie have. Claire raised Jamie's daughter and tells him all about her and brought pictures. And John raised Jamie's son and tells him all about him and brought him a portrait.
Yes. Joby writes, has he ever mentioned me? The eternal question of the unrequited lover. Claire concedes that Jamie did speak of him and called him friend. She has pity and understanding for John, but conflicting and defensiveness as well, as she defends her position as the true possessor of Jamie's heart, as she will have to again in the chapters and revelations, as she will have to again as the chapters' revelations continue. Lisa T. writes, back in John's office, quote, Gray picked up a small silver paperweight and turned it over and over in his hands, eyes fixed on the gleaming surface. A large sapphire was set in it, winking blue in the candlelight, unquote. The large sapphire is a reminder of the lost gems, and of course, it is the sapphire that Jamie gave to John. This is such a powerful, vulnerable moment for John. He knows that Claire is everything to Jamie. For Jamie to tell Claire that John is a friend is deeply meaningful to him, but it also reminds him of everything else Jamie will never be to him.
I think that the theme of this episode? The theme of this episode. Can we play? I wish we had the rights to it. We don't. But what is it? Monica and Brandy's That Boy Is Mine? That like 90s girl duet where they were fighting over a man.
I don't know a lot of pop songs, hip hop songs. From any era. I know late 80s and early 90s. I'm decent with that, but not a lot of hip hop. Melissa M. writes, when faced with the woman that he knows Jamie always loved, he seeks validation to his feelings, that he thinks and feels for him a fraction of how much he loves Jamie. She notices this and gives him what he wants, acknowledgement. But she has the power and he knows it. She's the woman that holds Jamie's heart. So John realizes that they'd been apart 20 years. Then he asks if Jamie had mentioned Willie. Oh, gosh. Claire asks, who's Willie?
How was that not on purpose? That was so on purpose.
That was a move, as Summer would say.
Super move.
Oh, like, Lordy.
Mega.
Lisa T. writes, oh, Summer, you'll like this. Lisa T. writes, John pulls a Jenny move on Claire, testing her loyalty and making it very clear that he knows Jamie's biggest secret and she doesn't. A low blow on John's part. By the same token, we know that Jamie has not been as forthcoming with Claire as he should have been. So what do you think about that? That was pretty, I like that she compared it to a Jenny move.
Hey, me and Jenny are not friends still.
In response, John pulls out an oval miniature. Claire sees the face and literally has to sit down. Quote, he might have been Bree's brother, was my first thought. The second, coming with the force of a blow to the solar plexus, was, my God in heaven, he is Bree's brother, unquote. Ooh, frack. Ooh, frack. Melissa M. writes, the sight of the Willie miniature reminds me of the scene in chapter...
No pausing there. The sight of the Willie miniature.
The sight of the Willie miniature reminds me of a scene in chapter 24 when Claire gives Jamie the pictures of Brianna. Quote, my hands trembled so violently that I nearly dropped it. I set it back on the desk, but kept my hand over it as though it may leap up and bite me, unquote. Both Claire and Jamie's hands are so important in these scenes. One may think that it is as if they are protecting the children with them, even though those children are only in pictures. I do wonder if they will zoom in on her right hand with Jamie's ring in this scene. I had never thought about the rings. I thought about the hands. John offers Claire some whiskey, which is gladly accepted. Well, duh. Didn't we already...
established.
Didn't we already made this point?
Or is that more of a wink or a nod to him saying, I know Jamie more?
Of him offering her whiskey?
Offering her whiskey, like a drink that is a Jamie drink.
Oh, I don't know. I didn't think about it that way, but it's possible. I have yet to come upon written evidence where Claire refuses a glass of whiskey or wine. Don't mind me. I love drinking, Claire. Well, that's actually, as Summer pointed out, that's like kind of one of the themes. I mean, it's a Claire theme, but it's kind of, I guess, one of the themes for this episode thus far. So Gray feels for her. He understands. She asks who the mother is, and he tells her that the woman is dead. Lord John says that it was Geneva Dunsany, his wife's sister. Yep, Lord J is married. Claire says, you'd better tell me what... Well, okay, I'm not quoting here, but she's basically telling, you better tell me what the F is up.
I mean, you
this
know...
This is all too much.
He really owes her nothing. He doesn't have to say anything to her, but I think he's getting some sort of sick pleasure out of... telling
that
her
makes
all
me
of these
sad
things.
I think you're right. That makes me sad. But and just what you said, that's exactly what Diana
farming this information out, just one little piece at a time. Oh, like, oh,
exactly,
there's something
like,
else.
Oh, so Willie, oh, who's Willie? Oh, he didn't tell you? Oh, and then yeah, he's
oh,
like
it's
my
son. Oh, and I'm raising him.
Oh,
and goodness. I gave him this picture of his son. Oh, and I do this for him. And oh, like seriously, it's like this little one-upmanship game that they're playing.
John says, and this is what Summer warned about, John says, quote, I cannot see that I am under any particular obligation to do so, unquote. Quote, I fought back the urge, this is Claire, I fought back the urge to rake my nails down his face, but the impulse must have shown on my face, for he pushed back his chair and got his feet under him, ready to move quickly, unquote. Claire then rewords.
I was going to say, I thought that that was a little bit of a strong reaction.
For Claire?
Yes. I mean, for as tense and as awful of a conversation as this for her to have, that I when I was reading it, I never, even though I thought it was kind of a catty back and forth, I never once took it to a level of violence in my head until that line. And I was like, wow, she was a lot more violent in this scene than I anticipated.
Huh. Well, she does have a good point, though. She rewords her request. She says, I would appreciate it very much if you did. And also, why did you show me that picture if you didn't mean me to know? Touché, Claire.
She said it first. Like, he brought it up first. He intended from the very beginning of that
exactly,
interaction.
That's what I'm saying. So if he brought it up, and he says, I'm under no obligation to tell you. Well, F that. If you're going to bring it up, it was your intention. So you effing better tell me. Sorry. There I disagree with him.
No, it's a game.
Oh, I don't disagree. But he absolutely owes her an obligation. He's obligated to tell her. He may not, but he should. Because they're both being kind of arse nuggets. But he's the arse nugget that, like...
Is that a thing?
Started to poke the bear. I know. Summer, just go with
arse,
it.
I won't blindly just go with it.
John sits to tell her, but first offers her alcohol. Of course. This is like how many drinks now? Three? I don't even know. Claire says that Jamie said he could trust John. Their relationship began in Ardsmuir. Then he gives the briefest outline of Geneva's death and Willie's birth. Lisa T. writes, poor Claire, imagining it. Well, we're actually going to see it. And then she put in parentheses, pagan joy. You know what that refers to?
What?
The scene between Jamie and Geneva.
Oh, that's pagan joy?
Yep.
Why is that?
Like, stop. And he's like, no, I can't. And it's like, he goes on and that's the pagan joy. So they were safe for now. Willie's grandmother, John thinks, knows about Willie's parentage, but she will never speak. There is too much wrapped up in him being the 9th Earl of Ellesmere.
Right?
Got it.
Everyone is relying on that.
Oh my gosh.
That's like,
it's the only
stage
savior.
Moms.
Yeah.
Stage moms and, like all the kids who have, all the parents who have kids in show business that are like all the Lohans parents. And they're all just, you know, living off of their kids.
I wish that I could have done that.
you got to get your daughter involved in some more stuff. I mean, she's already involved to the hilt, but.
No, I think I missed my shot on that. She's 9. She's practically an adult. I can't get her to do anything now.
Melissa M. writes, thinking about the Lady D, and that's in Dunsany conversation, the quote, did she know that Jamie was the father of Geneva's baby question. Lord John confirms that she did know, or did likely know, but would never say a word about it. It finally makes sense, of course, that Lady Dunsany kept the true paternity of the child from everyone to give the child position and status rather than make him the bastard child of a groom. But she knew. Debate over. Thanks, Lord John. But if I wrote down correctly, Diana wrote John thinks. So it's not really debate over. I mean, you could say debate's over. I think most people agree that she does know, but Diana actually didn't write. He said it definitively. He said he thinks, which I think is enough proof, but you can't say it's definitive, in my opinion. John tells Claire that Jamie had given Willie to him.
That doesn't sound Erica good. He gave him Willie?
Summer. Erica B. writes, I'm glad Claire finds out about Willie from Lord John. This gives her the opportunity to work it through on her own without the crazy outbursts she's been known to have when finding out information that upsets her. Really? Oh. Joe B. writes, John is our reintroduction to Willie and showing the picture to Claire, who blurts out the truth as soon as she sees it. She can't process the concept of Geneva and so reacts strongly to the idea of John's wife. John has had to keep up appearances regarding his sexual preferences, and I wonder what Isabel knows or if she cares. Some clues are in the Scottish prisoner, but many questions remain about this Lady Grey. We shall see. In the scene in the stable, this is when John is casting back and telling Claire the last, I guess, last scene, the goodbye scene after John has said goodbye to Willie, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So in the scene in the stable, the best line is when John says he is to be married. Jamie replies, married to a woman? I don't know why that made me laugh. I laughed for like 5 minutes.
I mean, imagining Sam say it like that is pretty funny. Yeah,
it is. I know.
I don't think he'll say it like that.
It's like, I'm married to a sheep? I mean, what else is he going to say? In those days, that was the only possibility.
He'll nuance it. I'm just saying the tone and texture you gave that line reading would be hysterical coming out of Sam.
That's all I'm saying.
Okay, so this seems to be the first time I've read these lines, because I apparently didn't remember before. This is Jamie. Quote, Christ, man, you canna do that. Gray replies, I can. He grimaced. Quote, I made trial of my capacity in London. Be assured that I shall make her an adequate husband. You needn't necessarily enjoy the act in order to perform it. Or perhaps you were aware of that?
This just makes me think of future books.
Snap! Oh, gosh.
Yep. Are you thinking future books?
Hold on a second. Oh, yeah. Hello. Number 7? Number 7.
That makes it sound like you've numbered your positions. The number 7?
Oh, you just mean wait, like white, just, white just stag wait for the, number 7.
Just wait for the number 8. And I don't even know what's coming in the number 9.
Number 8 was nothing. It was number 7. I mean, and what you're talking about was number 7. But it's funny. You mean like, okay, got it. Never mind.
Well, there it is. So welcome back.
Anne S. writes, I love when Lord John tells Jamie that he has made trial in London and knows he will do as a husband. Has he really never made trial with a woman before? Huh. Lisa T. writes, it shows that he will take his role as a husband seriously and that he genuinely cares for Isabel. John tells Jamie that he is resigning his commission so that he can help Lord Dunsany care for his estate and, of course, take care of Willie. I love that John is left blinking in the brilliant sun. John knows that while Jamie will never be his lover, he and Jamie are now bonded in a deeper way. They are family. He will always be a part of Jamie's life now because of Willie. And the match makes sense. family, friends, and all. So Gray will resign his commission, we find out, and then here it is, quote, "I should be grateful then if you would stand as stepfather to my son," and, quote, "I would be obliged to you. In return, if you want, I mean, I would be willing to, that is..." Oh, my people, Outlander fans. Jamie hella offers.
Just say it, Ginger. What does he offer? Say it. What does he offer? He doesn't offer the D. No, he does not offer the D. He's offering the B.
Does he offer to be...
Excuse me? I think he's offering to bottom. I don't think he's offering to top.
Oh.
You generally don't offer to top unless they ask you to. I mean...
I know nothing about this thing. He offered him his body. That's all.
I know, but Jamie's experience is as a catcher. So I don't anticipate him.
I don't think.
I don't anticipate him offering to be the top. Lead. Oh. Yeah.
Oh, gosh.
You can have it if you want it, but.
Grace suppresses a laugh. "My dear Jamie, are you actually offering me your body in payment for my promise to look after Willie?" Well, yes, he is. And Jamie says, he seems exasperated, like, "Well, do you want it or no?" Right. At this, Gray did laugh long and hard. Jamie misunderstands. "You dinna want me then," Gray replies. "I shall probably want you to the day I die. But tempted as I am, do you really think that I would demand or accept any payment for such a service? Really, I should feel my honor most grossly insulted by that offer, save that I know the depth of feeling which prompted it." And so they settle for friendship. Lisa T. writes, "This is a fascinating conversation. We get to see it again, but from Jamie's perspective. I can't imagine what Claire thought listening to this. This is one of John's best moments in terms of Jamie, but his worst with Claire. He really is testing her here." Martina P. writes, "I love and enjoy the tension between Claire and Lord John. They are moving into conflict, and Claire demands clarification. We get a conversation in which Lord John reveals Jamie's secret and tells Claire about William. I so sympathize with Claire in this chapter. There is this jealousy of Lord John that I have full compassion for. She is realizing that it has only been 4 months since she walked into that print shop and is quite unaware of Jamie's life in 20 years.
I think it's been and 4 months since we read about the print shop.
I know. And it's just slowly catching up. So before they parted, Jamie grasps his face, Lord John's, and gives him a light kiss. Quote, "There was a fleeting impression of tenderness and strength held in check, the faint taste of ale and fresh-baked bread. Then it was gone, and John Gray stood blinking in the brilliant sun." Unquote. "Oh," he said. Jamie gave him a shy, crooked smile. I suppose I may be not poisoned." Thus, the governor shares the tale about Jamie, Willie, and himself, and assures her with, quote, "That was the first time he touched me willingly until this evening," unquote.
That phrase, I mean... I know what the phrase means, but when you say that, it sounds like he'd been forcing him to do things for many, many years.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So I understand the choice of the word, meaning that he chose, that was a, it was meaningful in the fact that he chose to touch him. But by stating that willingly touched him made it sound like he'd been forced to. So, I mean, if he just said that was the first time he chose to touch me. I don't know. The willingly part just made it sound like, well,
like he'd done it before in some other way.
Right.
So Claire is swimming in so many emotions. John says that he should have maybe recognized her on the porpoise. And she's surprised at this. He reminds her about that time before Culloden, the young English soldier. And she finally puts two and three together. Melissa M. writes, "Okay, Ginger, I looked up the symbolism of the willow tree. Thank you, Melissa, because I did not. That Jamie has the intense conversation where he asked Lord John to look after Willie in exchange for, well, him. I looked it up for you. Here's what the website, and I'll include it, says about the willow tree. It does state that the willow tree does relate to Celtic and Christian tradition, but what I found most interesting is this, a direct quote from the aforementioned site. Quote, "The message of the willow tree is to adjust with life rather than fight it, surrendering to the process. The willow reminds us to let go and surrender completely to our innermost selves and to gain a deeper understanding of our subconscious. Another powerful symbolic meaning of the willow tree is its adaptability. The willow tree's ability to not only survive, but also thrive in some of the most challenging conditions. The tree is also a symbol for Jamie at this time in his life. Jamie has had to make the uncomfortable choice to leave Hellwater, despite this being the place that he spent some of the, quote, happiest years of his life, unquote. Jamie, much like the description of the willow tree, has had to survive and thrive in challenging conditions. Think of his time after Culloden, after losing Claire, the cave, in Ardsmuir, and Hellwater. Jamie learned to adapt to these environments and made the best of them. Just like a willow tree, Jamie bends, never breaks." I like that.
You liked it because you didn't have to look it up.
No, I didn't even think to look it up. We were plowing through these, so I didn't even think about it. Joby writes, "Like Mary McNabb offering comfort to Jamie in the cave, Jamie's kiss for John is offered and taken for the same. Comfort, affection, and a thing he can use. Here is also another reference to Jamie as the son." Michael M. writes, "We got Michael. Michael's back. My favorite part of this chapter is the beginning of the not yet a friendship and not a relationship acquaintance. Acquaintanceship. The beginning of the acquaintanceship between Lord John and Claire. I sense a mutual respect between the two, even though this ship, meaning the acquaintanceship, begins with a mutual jealousy. My favorite lines in this encounter, Michael, my favorite lines in this encounter is this exchange. Quote, yours were the first woman's breasts I had ever seen, he said wryly. It was a considerable shock. From which you appear to have recovered, sorry, from which you have appeared, a monkey. From which you appear to have let me get this out. From which you appear to have recovered, I said rather coldly. You seem to have forgiven Jamie for breaking your arm and threatening to shoot you, at least. And then Diana is, well, Diana again in this heart-wrenching exchange between the two of them. And this is why I got the Voyager clip.
Do you know, he began, then stopped. He looked down at his clenched hands then, not at me. A blue stone winked on one knuckle, bright as a teardrop. Do you know, he said again softly, addressing his hands, what it is to love someone and never, never be able to give them peace or joy or happiness? He looked up then, eyes filled with pain. To know that you cannot give them happiness. Not through any fault of yours or theirs, but only because you were not born the right person for them. I sat quiet, seeing not his, but another handsome face, dark, not fair. Not feeling the warm breath of the tropical night, but the icy hand of a Boston winter. Seeing the pulse of light like heart's blood spilling across the cold snow of hospital linens. Only because you were not born the right person for them. I know, I whispered, hands clenched in my lap. I had told Frank, leave me. But he couldn't. No more than I could love him rightly, having found my match elsewhere. Oh, Frank, I said silently, forgive me. I suppose I'm asking whether you believe in fate, Lord John went on. The ghost of a smile wavered on his face. You, of all people, would seem best suited to say. You'd think so, wouldn't you? I said bleakly. But I don't know any more than you. He shook his head, then reached out and picked up the miniature. I have been more fortunate than most, I suppose, he said quietly. There was the one thing he would take from me. His expression softened as he looked down into the face of the boy in the palm of his hand. And he has given me something most precious in return. Without thinking, my hand spread out across my belly. Jamie had given me that same precious gift, and at the same great cost to himself. The sound of footsteps came down the hall, muffled by the carpet. There was a sharp rap at the door, and a militiaman stuck his head into the office. "Is the lady recovered yet?" he asked. "Captain Jacobs has finished his questions, and Monsieur Alexandre's carriage has returned." I got hastily to my feet. "Yes, I'm fine." I turned to the governor, not knowing what to say to him. "I thank you for... that is..." He bowed formally to me, coming around the desk to see me out. "I regret extremely that you should have been subjected to such a shocking experience, ma'am," he said, with no trace of anything but diplomatic regret in his voice. He had resumed his official manner, smooth and polished as his parquet floors. I followed the militiaman, but at the door I turned impulsively. "When we met that night aboard the Porpoise, I'm glad you didn't know who I was. I liked you. Then." He stood for a second, polite, remote. Then the mask dropped away. "I liked you too," he said quietly. "Then."
The scene between the two of them is the end of it. And I think you just said this, but the end of it. And I always think of that moment when they meet on the ship and they're having that moment together. When later on they're just like, "I liked you when I met you." And he's like, "Me too." It was just that moment of loss of we could have, you know, them both kind of mourning what could have been, because now they're like, now we're Monica and Brandy and we're fighting over the boy.
But the thing is, that is, that's the sad thing, is that they're still the same people.
I know, but it's Grange. It's going to come back.
Oh, I know. Yes, you're right. Anne S. writes, "Jamie has as many secrets in his heart as Claire has tricks in her skirts." I don't know what that's supposed to reference. Jamie reminds her again that others have had pieces of him, but only she has had all of him. Body, hands, name, heart, and soul. Deep sigh. Lisa T. writes, "As the title suggests, much is revealed, but not all. This is such a pivotal scene going forward. It firmly establishes John's place in Jamie and Claire's lives. It is a devastating scene for Claire. She realizes yet again that Jamie still has kept huge secrets from her. Can't wait to see this scene." Oopsie, Lisa.
Great. Even now this one's John, not going to happen either.
I know. Even though John has gotten his digs in, he is ultimately an honorable gentleman.
Oh my God, Ginger.
What?
I swear to you, it sound, I know you didn't say it, but it sounded like you said, "and he got his digs in."
Summer. Digs.
Thank you for enunciating that time. I got this real scene confused.
This scene reminds me of a scene when BJR is talking to Claire about what Jamie is like in bed. BJR wants to talk to the only other person who knows Jamie that way. He wants to relive and share that intimacy. I think that John revealing his deep feelings to Claire echoes that scene, but in stark contrast to BJR. Yes, John wants to talk about Jamie with Claire, but he's not doing it out of obsession. Yes, he's doing it out of being a big D. Sorry.
I'm sorry, you got my attention. And what about Big D?
And I like Jord Lawn.
Jord Lawn. Grange. Jord Lawn. Jord Lawn Grange.
Oh my God, how many ways can we say this? Oh Lord. Lorraine B. writes, "This meeting sets the tone for Claire and John's future relationship and gives Claire all sorts of doubts. Because again, Jamie has omitted something very important about his past life. But at the end of the chapter, Jamie and Claire have a heart-to-heart, and they both repledge themselves to one another, and we'll get there." Martina P. writes, "We do not get a lot of material where Claire is matched against a character that is just as smart and capable as she is." That's true. "I like to say that Lord John Grey is a rhyming with me today."
No.
Sorry, I made that part up. "I like to say that Lord John is that character. He is a definite match for Claire. I extremely love the dynamic between them. I was initially a little surprised how candid Lord John is with Claire. He didn't even try to deny his sexual orientation, and he is totally honest with her." Come to think of it, Claire is the only person he can be honest with and safely talk about his love for Jamie. Quite remarkable, isn't it?
But he love hates her right now.
You mean...
Yeah, he can...
Late?
He can...
Late?
He can, what?
Late, sir? Levate, sir?
Love, we I'm need trying to stop to... trying to create words. We're bad
combining
at
words.
It. We're bad at it. Let's just move on.
In the carriage ride home, Claire feels like she is sitting. So Jamie comes and collects her. Or she's... whatever. They get to the carriage. In the carriage ride home, Claire feels like she is sitting next to a stranger. But they chat on something that's considerably safer. Did Mr. Willoughby do the deed or no? Jamie had had to lie and say he'd met Mr. Willoughby on the boat from Martinique and was showing him around to people at the party. But then this will be checked with the next packet when it arrives in the next 6 days. So they have a little time only to hope that Mr. Willoughby is found. And they have to find young Ian within 6 days. Jamie plans to go to Rose Hall and connect with that Mrs. Abernathy. But before they go to bed, Jamie calls Claire to look out at the lagoon with him. And there was a herd, I think it's called a herd, of manatees. Claire is thinking more about Lord John's revelations. Jamie, however, goes back to Mr. Willoughby. He thinks that maybe it was him. When someone is so alone, especially a man, quote, making love to a woman is maybe the only thing will make him forget it for a time, unquote. And that's what made him wed Leary. Quote, needing to forget I was alone, he says, unquote. Then Jamie decides he must tell her something. He puts the small oval miniature in her hand, and he tells her of his son. He says he hasn't told anyone about him, even Jenny. He hasn't seen him since he was wee, and he will never see him again. He asks for her forgiveness. Claire asks if he loved her, and he tells her, the mother of the child. She asks about his son. I was like, dude, the end of this chapter. We need more Davina.
But how shall I tell you all these things? He said, the line of his mouth twisting. And then say to you, it's only you I've ever loved. How should you believe me? The question hung in the air between us, shimmering like the reflection from the water below. If you say it, I said, I'll believe you. You will? He sounded faintly astonished. Why? Because you're an honest man, Jamie Fraser, I said, smiling so that I wouldn't cry. And may the Lord have mercy on you for it. Only you, he said, so softly I could barely hear him, to worship you with my body, give you all the service of my hands, to give you my name and all my heart and soul with it. Only you, because you will not let me lie, and yet you love me. I did touch him then. Jamie, I said softly, and laid my hand on his arm. You aren't alone any more. He turned then and took me by the arms, searching my face. I swore to you, I said, when we married. I didn't mean it then, but I swore, and now I mean it. I turned his hand over in both mine, feeling the thin, smooth skin at the base of his wrist, where the pulse beat under my fingers, where the blade of his dirk had cut his flesh once, and spilled his blood to mingle with mine forever. I pressed my own wrist against his, pulse to pulse, heartbeat to heartbeat. Blood of my blood, I whispered. Bone of my bone. His whisper was deep and husky. He knelt quite suddenly before me and put his folded hands in mine, the gesture a Highlander makes when swearing loyalty to his chieftain. I'll give you my spirit, he said, head bent over our hands. Till our life shall be done, I said softly. But it isn't done yet, Jamie, is it? Then he rose and took the shift from me, and I lay back on the narrow bed, naked, pulled him down to me through the soft yellow light, and took him home and home and home again. And we were neither one of us alone.
Ever.
but I just want to know with her glass face how she didn't like give away the fact that she already knew all this stuff.
Yeah, that's a good question.
And, you know, it was just like, he's like, oh, I have to tell you this. How did she not like literally look at him and go, I know your boyfriend told me. I feel so bad for Jamie in this moment.
Me too.
Because he has taken on all the guilt of everything. It feels like anything bad that's happened around him, he's taken the blame for it. Even down to the fact that whatever her name is, Geneva, died giving birth to mm-hmm. Willie, that's his fault. Like, it's not his fault. I mean, it was a contributing factor for sure, but it was not his fault. But he carries that with him, that guilt with him, that to this day, that it's clearly something that colors him. And I just, part of me just wants to tell him to, you know, calm down, dude. It's not all you.
You know what I just realized?
No.
Geneva is the English name for a Swiss city, correct?
Yes.
And the French name is Genève. The German name is not as pretty as the English or French. Do you know the German name for Geneva?
It rarely is.
Do you know the German name for Geneva?
Gisela. I have no idea.
What? No.
I said Genf. Gisela?
And Gent? I said no. No. Genf.
Oh, yeah. No, not as cute.
Not at all. But you know what happened in Genf?
Something awful.
Yeah.
You gonna tell me?
If you want to hear. It doesn't matter. Die Kaiserin Elisabeth.
Oh, God.
Was assassinated. I love your response. Was assassinated in Genf in 1898. That's all.
I want everyone to know that with the invention of this podcast, I thought for sure I was done hearing
Cece
about Cece and Kaiserin Elisabeth. I thought for sure that had run its course and you'd replaced it with this newfound obsession.
With Hamilton?
God, not even Hamilton. I thought Outlander eclipsed it.
Huh. It's completely different. One's true.
Hamilton
one's not.
Didn't eclipse it either. Hamilton just peppered everything else in your life, including this.
That's true. Of course.
But yeah, I thought it was gone. Long live Kaiserin Elisabeth.
Yep, that's true. Erica B. writes, after they return to the house, they watch some manatees in the lagoon. One is caring for its baby, and perhaps this triggers Jamie to finally talk about Willie. Oh, that was a good point. I didn't think about that. Joe B. writes, it is their pattern of confession, absolution, and recommitment, echoing the fealty sworn at Leah after he beat her. He kneels and gives her fealty as she does the same. And she does the same, echoing their wedding vows. As they make love, home is a repeated word. It is what they are to each other. It's said three times in the first person, and what Claire says three times is true. Lorraine B. writes, this heartfelt bearing of souls and the following consummation melts me every time and keeps me coming back for more. For ultimately, this is what we're all here for, the strength of Jamie and Claire's love. Martina P. writes, I have such compassion for Jamie and his explanation of why he couldn't tell Claire sooner. Claire reaffirms her belief in Jamie's honesty and goodness, and they renew their oaths and vows to each other. I just adore their profound ability to reconnect through sex, and neither of them is alone. This last passage of the chapter almost makes me gulp for air and makes me quite teary-eyed. That is exactly why I am so in love with Diana's writing. She sometimes takes us on weird journeys, but she always comes back and gives us those super powerful moments of Jamie and Claire's deep, deep love and their utterly beautiful and romantic relationship.
This also makes me think, and I mentioned earlier about his overwhelming guilt about everything that's happened in his life. But also, there's a part of him that I don't think believes Claire's going to stay. That I think it feels like he's in that place of, I love her more than she loves me, and this thing that I have to tell her is going to be the thing. There's no way she could possibly stay with me. And I think that it's a disservice to her because she's clearly there. She gave up everything to be there. You know, I don't know What do you think? Give me something. What's something that would make Claire leave? Like for real leave.
Not real leave. Not fake leave, like she almost did with Leary.
Yeah. But that's, I mean, that's like, yeah. That was clearly like, I'm leaving. I'm going. Don't stop me. I'm going to go.
Honestly, I think the only reason she would leave, and if she were alone when, or just with Jamie, is if Jamie died.
So clearly she needs to sit him down and tell him that, because, and then say, you need to tell me everything right now, everything. And know that the only thing that's going to make me leave is you dead. And I don't plan on killing you myself. So tell me everything.
Yeah.
Because these like slow churning, hard to pull out of him, like taffy explanations and admissions of guilt and pulling this out of him.
I love that. You just gave me the title, Taffy Explanations. That's it. Okay, go ahead. I want to hear more, but I had to tell you that. Yeah, I know they're hard. It's hard for the reader. You're like, oh my gosh, just say it already.
Right. And I think that when you have a long running novel like this or in series of books, you kind of have to there has to be the long game. You know what I mean? Everything can't be instant gratification, but it's so exhausting as a reader to have something.
Yeah.
Hanging over a character for so long.
Yeah.
Are there any, can you think of any secrets that are still unknown to the masses? The reader knows them all. I just mean like to the characters. Are there any like overarching secrets that have been hanging over characters for that span books that we're all stressed about? Like, can you think of any?
In book 8?
Like what's, sure. Is there still one in book 8? Just something that introduced.
I'm asking you. The only thing I can think of, but it's not any of the characters. It's the reader, and it's Diana's freaking fault because she's so good at what she does, and it makes us like, what? The thing that is being slowly in a slow burn, whatever you want to call it, is this whole. And I am totally like, I will have to bleep this out. But it's about. That to me is, I know people complained about it being, that's like the last minute add on, but are you kidding me? It rounds it out and it gives him, I think, even if you don't love him, right? It gives him like, makes him so much more interesting. You're like, oh, so he was actually trying to do stuff and trying to save her and trying to, I was like, oh my gosh, to me, oh my gosh, that, I almost want that book more than I want the Ellen book.
True. That's a good example. It's a good example. And mostly because, well, maybe it's not a good example.
It's not a good example.
But I'll tell you why it works. The reason it works is because it's left to hang over our heads, like you said, by Diana. But we only know that it's hanging over our heads because she told us. Because in the book, as we talked about, it seemed quite clear that he was cheating on her. Everyone read it the first time. Everyone took it the same way. And then only Diana has come out and said, no, he didn't. I never wrote that he cheated on her. He didn't cheat on her. I never said that. So then everyone's like, but you did. That's how I read it. I've been reading it that way for 2 decades now. So it's like hanging over our heads. When are you going to give us the passage? When are you going to give us the proof that that's not what happened? So it's the slow burn of everyone believes that it happened until we're going to have this. But we know that it didn't happen because she told us and she wrote it. So I don't know. It's not a perfect example, but.
No, it's not. But it's interesting you said that because this episode will come out a lot later than it was in print or in an article. But there was actually an interview where Diana is quoted or whatever as having said that, or the article said that season 3, basically, the writers had to make, they had to come down on one side or the other. They could not, for the sake of the television adaptation, not the books. The books are always a separate entity. So please remember that, dear listener. But for the sake of the show and for going forward, they had to come down on one side or the other. So they had to make a choice. And Diana obviously can't, you know, may say something happened or something didn't happen. But again, it's in the books. It's at worst nebulous or maybe at best nebulous. I don't know. At best nebulous, at worst damning of him. Right. So I think both sides can find stuff to support their position, but basically apparently the writers had to make a choice and they did. And she says that, and she didn't say what it was. I mean, I think we can guess what it was, but she says that they did very well with it. Like they made a choice and then they have to go forward with it. Cause obviously that changes. I wouldn't even say that changes the storyline, but you have to stick with it. You can't. And Frank is, for all intents and purposes, gone. I mean, he's not around. Once he's gone and you're following us along with us, you know he's gone. You read up to Voyager, to where we are now, almost the end. You know he's gone. He's always going to be, obviously, in Bree's life. He's in her mind, and he's always will be her father. And he will always be a part of Claire's life in memory, but and in his inner history. But yeah, it's... This is a whole other thing that's going off topic, but it's interesting that that specific issue you brought up, you can't say will be defined or determined or settled, because it's not. Because this whole thing is from the books and they are separate. But because of the way the show works, they had to make a decision and they did. And so all intents and purposes, the television adaptation will make a choice. And it's basically, there's nothing is left up to the imagination. You will know. One way or the other, you will know. So that's a thing to kind of get people. And I don't know if we share. I don't think I shared that. I don't share a lot of articles like that. I don't want to bring in too many potential spoilers. But here on the show where people we know are, this is a read along. We're almost done with the end. That's not a spoiler. You know what I'm saying? Because it's... we've already talked about both sides of that issue so much that if they came down on the cheating side, people would be say, oh, see, I told you so. If they came down on the he didn't cheat side, it would be, well, that's Diana's. So it really, and it wasn't Diana's, wasn't.
I can tell you right now.
It wasn't up to her, though.
Of course it wasn't. But in the show, I can tell you right now, he didn't. And the reason he didn't is because they freaking love him. They have expanded his character. Oh, Ginger, they love Frank. They admit that they love Frank.
Of course they do. But I believe that they will make him as a cheater. See, that's so funny that we yes, that's what I took away from the article. I think it's funny that we have a different and totally understandable, but different opinions on the actual book. And that we have understandable, but different opinions on the guess, on the take. So it'll be fascinating to watch that. Yeah.
All right.
But that was the,
what was that?
I think it could have been Matt Carter. If not, it was, but look around, you might find the article, but I had the distinct feeling that they came down on the side of cheat, but it was done in a very kind of not classy, but kind of understanding way. Oh, I think it was done because there was some sort of agreement. They had like a pact or an agreement. They had an understanding, something like that. Finally, Melissa M. writes, on a personal note, when Lord John says, quote, there is more to a marriage than carnal love, a great deal more, unquote. Ugh, heartbreak. But this just shows how much he loves Jamie, and Jamie knows it. Even though he is going to offer himself to Lord John, he knows that he can never offer him the kind of deep, true love that Lord John seeks from him.
And that was chapter 59. Join us next time when we discuss chapter 60, entitled The Scent of Gemstones. Do gemstones have scents?
In chapter 60, they do.
I mean, but do you own any gemstones? Do they smell like anything?
I don't know. I don't think so. I haven't smelled. I have cats.
I don't think I have any real gemstones.
My cats smell.
Do you think if I go to like Tiffany's, they'll let me smell their jewelry?
Only if you take me with you, because you know I love Tiffany's.
I'm like, can I smell that giant ring? And can my sister have a little blue box?
Even if it's empty, I don't care. I just want the box.
I know. I know you do.
Okay, so thank you as always so much for listening. We look forward to our next episode. Thank you to our generous partner, Zencastr, who offers high-fidelity podcasting. Check out Zencastr and use coupon code OUTLANDER20, OUTLANDER20, for 20% off 3 months or 20% off for a year. Connect with us. Visit our website at outlanderpod.com. Find us on Facebook, facebook.com/outlanderpod. We'd love for you to join our Facebook community at outlanderpod.com/group. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at @outlanderpod.